The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? I hope you had a good long weekend and got over the St. Patrick's Day holidays. We have Emily and Amelia Nagowski on the show today, and they've written a book about burnout, the secret to solving the stress cycle. And it's specifically aimed towards women. And I read it over the weekend and this morning, and it's a great read and some really good, sensible, down-to-earth advice in it. So I'm looking forward to talking to Emily and Amelia about that. And you might find something that might help you if you lead a very stressful life. Don't we all lead stressful lives now? One of the things that they're saying over and over again is that sleep is hugely important. And if you want to get a good sleep, you need a good pillow. And they're writing about pillows in the papers today. Seemingly there are different types of pillows for different types of people who sleep differently. And you should change your pillow every 3 years. And if you need to know when your pillow needs to be changed, they've invented the saddlebag test. So what you do with your pillow is you lay it across your arm, your forearm, I would imagine. And if it folds over like a saddlebag, then it has reached the end of its life. So that's the saddlebag test. You need to get a new pillow. The second method is called the press test. You can do this to see if you need to get a new pillow. So you place it on a firm surface, press down the centre, and a good quality pillow will bounce back at you. Now, not bounce back at you, but it'll, you know, return to its original shape. That means you have a good pillow. Now, depending on the type of sleeper you are, you will need a different pillow. According to the experts, this is. So if you're a back sleeper, you need a soft pillow. You don't want something that's going to push your head forward and put a strain on your neck. So back sleeper, soft pillow. Side sleeper, you need a more firm pillow, quite thick, because you need to keep your head, you know, at the right level. So the distance between the side of your head and the end of your shoulder, the pillow needs to be that depth. That's what they say. If you're a front sleeper, you'll need a pillow that supports the neck and back and therefore should invest in a soft pillow. And if you're a tosser and turner like myself, well, it depends. It depends. You see, my pillow is over 3 years old and it would definitely fail the saddlebag test, but I couldn't sleep without it. I couldn't. It's my pillow. It's probably like some sort of an adult comfort blanket. You know those things that children have, the little things that they snuggle up to and have all their smells on it. That's my pillow, you see. So it's not just the thing to put my head on. There's a lot more going on with my pillow. All the smells and all the emotional attachment over all the years. That's my pillow. Speaking of adults, scientists are telling us now that we don't reach full adulthood until we're in our 30s. So it's a bit of a sham that a person is recognised as an adult at 18. So they get to vote, they get to be able to drink and all sorts of other things at the age of 18, but they're not really reaching adulthood until they're in their 30s. These new insights have major implications for society, the scientists claim. They were speaking ahead of a meeting of the Academy of Medical Sciences in Oxford, which focuses specifically on brain development. Processes that involve boosting the conductivity of nerves, building neural networks and pruning away unwanted connections begin in the womb and continue for decades. So they know, for example, that a burst of upheaval in the brain is thought to account for the notoriously difficult behaviour of adolescence. But that doesn't necessarily end once people leave their teens. What we're really saying, the scientists say, is that to have a definition of when you move from childhood to adulthood looks increasingly absurd. It's a much more nuanced transition than takes place over, and it takes place over 3 decades, said. So all ye people in your 20s, if you're listening, you're not recognised as adults yet by the scientists. Mairead was on to us via email, ray@rte.ie. She says, hope you all had a great long weekend. Just wanted to share our weekend experience with your listeners and give a big up to a small business. A big up to a small business. I like that. We visited Malahide in Dublin on Saturday, specifically to bring the children on Toots Train, which runs through Malahide and offers a fun way to see the village, beach, castle, etc. Anyway, through an admin error, we had read online that it closed at 6 o'clock. So as they advised us, we should, when we were ready to go home around 4:30, we text them for a pickup, ETA. estimated time of arrival. The guy texts back and said he'd be there in 20 minutes, suiting us perfectly. When we went to meet up point, he was in his own car and not in the train. He had closed up for the day and then got our text, so drove down to collect us in his own car to bring us back to our car. When we asked him why he didn't just tell us that he had closed up, he said, well, you visited our town, spent money in the local shops, eaten in local cafe, paid for the train, so we're not going to see you stuck now, are we? Give him a big shout out from us, Ray, please, and tell people to flock to Malahide and to Toots Train. The hospitality is amazing. That's Mairead. That's beyond the call of duty, Mairead, isn't it? That's a lovely thing. It's been a tough weekend, hasn't it, since, you know, the shootings in New Zealand on Friday morning and through the weekend, and just tragedy after tragedy. People losing their lives on the road at that hen party in Carlingford and then at that disco, and it's horrific. We got an email from Chris. He says, I was wondering if you might be the man to contact about this. Reporting of the recent mass shooting in New Zealand, as previous ones, have managed to fill us in on the suspect's background and the influences that built them up to their acts, where they travelled, what they posted online, etc. Do I care? Do we really need to know any of this? For me, it would already be sufficient in the first 24 hours to refer to a male suspect in his 20s, and afterwards no other reporting on the suspect, but rather the victims and their families. If necessary to give a name, I might suggest Joe Headbanger. Two, so often, following a drugs bust or seizure, the press are happy to report the street value of the seizure, very diligent but unnecessary. Who in the general public needs to be able to compare these values? Why not instead report the amount as a scrap value of less than €1,000? This, I feel, is closer to the reality and helps deny any image boost to the drug traffickers. Perhaps there are some among your listeners who share similar opinions. Yeah, well, the Prime Minister of New Zealand has come out, Jacinda Ardern, and she has spoken for the first time since the tragedy on Friday morning. And she spoke this morning, and she gave a powerful statement. She would agree with you, Chris. I'll just play it in here. And this is the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern.
He sought many things from his act of terror, but one was notoriety. And that is why you will never hear me mention his name. He is a terrorist. He is a criminal. He is an extremist. But he will, when I speak, be nameless. And to others, I implore you, speak the names of those who were lost rather than the name of the man who took them. He may have sought notoriety, but we in New Zealand will give him nothing, not even his name.
Powerful words from the Prime Minister there, Jacinda Ardern, and laudable as well. The unfortunate thing is, in the world we live in now, although traditional media, newspapers, radio stations and TV stations may go along with Jacinda Ardern and not name the shooter, unfortunately the people who perpetrate these acts live in a different world. They live online, and any information they want about themselves, well, you know, he's in prison, or previous perpetrators are all there. And he was a big fan of the man who killed 69 people on Utøya Island back in 2011 in Norway. And then we spoke to Dave Cullen last week, and he was telling us that the person who perpetrated the crime in Parkland School, he was a big fan of the two lads who had killed all those students in Columbine 20 years previously. So there's a copycat nature of this thing, and there's a knock-on effect, and how you break the cycle, I don't know. And, you know, it's a good thing that we're not going to mention their name and give them notoriety in the traditional press, but traditional media, but it's still going to be there online. That's the unfortunate thing. 51551 ray@rte.ie. With regard to the pillow saga, I love a soft pillow, and we'll go to a few shops until I will find the correct softness. Then I was it very so often in a warm wash to keep it hygienic. Oh, you do it in a warm wash. That's Mary. You should try a woolo. It's wool and pillow. Real sheep's wool pillows. Real comfort, says Francis in Galway. And I sleep in no pillow. And I sleep 8 to 9 hours like a baby, a good baby. Thanks for filling us in on that. That'd be uncomfortable, no pillow. Wouldn't it? Would it? Yeah. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Mumford & Sons, Little Lion Man on RT Radio 1. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Why did some news shows name the terrorist while covering the PM's appeal not to name him? Asks Martin. I don't know the answer to that, Martin. I don't know the answer to that. On sort of lighter, on a lighter note, This Time is the new programme by Steve Coogan. It's This Time with Alan Partridge, and they're sort of lampooning daytime television, early evening television, and Alan Partridge comes out of retirement because the main presenter got sick and then eventually he died, and so Alan Partridge has taken over, so he finds himself back in the limelight, so to speak. Last night, it was pure comedy genius. So they invited lookalikes on. So they had a Daniel Craig lookalike, and then they had a Mayo farmer who was an Irish, or was an Alan Partridge lookalike. So this is where the, Alan Partridge's co-presenter introduces the man called Martin Brennan. Mayo farmer looks like Alan Partridge.
Now, Martin, hello, or should I say, aha!
Ha-ha!
It's aha, there's no H.
Did they put in a H?
You did put an H in, yeah.
Now, normally you're a farmer in the west of Ireland.
I am.
Okay, and how long have you been an Alan impersonator?
Since a week Thursday. My cousin said, Martin, you look like the fella off the TV. Show me on the computer. I said, who the hell is that? He said, it's,
Alan Partridge.
I said, who the hell is that? He said, he's a famous fella. He used to be on the TV way back. I had never heard of you. I said, who the hell is that?
He keeps saying that.
I didn't know who you were. My cousin said, you'd be as well being a Martin Brennan impersonator in Sligo.
Nah, because I'm never going to go there.
You'll be welcome on the farm. As long as you roll your sleeves up, get your hands dirty.
Get up the yard.
Who's that?
It's my cousin. He said he'd like to see you on the farm. Your man would be feeding turf to the sheep, trying to get a pig to lay an egg.
No.
Milking the bulls.
What?
Said you'd be trying to milk the bulls.
Dirty get. Disgusting.
Ha ha!
Aha, there's no H.
That's very funny. And, of course, Steve Coogan holidayed in Ireland, so he had the Mayo accent. Perfect. And the brilliant thing about it was brilliantly observed, because Martin Brennan was... it was more important to him to entertain his cousins and the crowd in the corner than it was to entertain Alan Partridge and his co-presenter. So that was the cousin there. And then he started to sing song with a band, and he started off pretty innocuous enough.
I love you as I never loved before.
You're going to ruin a slow-mo sequence of Alsatians jumping up and biting the arms of dog handlers set to Hungry Like the Wolf by Duran Duran. It's great TV.
Come on, lads. Come on. Come to me.
Please stop playing.
Or my dream of love is o'er. I love you as I loved you. When you were sweet. When you were sweet. 16.
And then it all changed.
Come out, you black and tan. Come and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Tell her how the IRA made you run like hell away. Run the green and lovely lanes of Kilashandra. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man should stand behind the men behind the wire.
Come on, Simon.
Ah, that was grand, there. Yeah, that. Mighty. Yeah. Double O fecking bollocks.
Oh, my God, that was like an advert for the IRA.
Like an advert for the IRA. You see, it's cringe. Cringe comedy. And you would feel very uncomfortable watching it, but you'd be laughing as well. It's, This Time with Alan Partridge, and it's up there. Well, you can't watch it back, can you, on the BBC? But they've posted those clips, so you can watch them, and the Irish Times and independent.ie, they all have those clips up if you want to see it as well as hearing it. 51551 ray@rte.ie. At 10, a child, at 20, wild, at 30, good, if ever, at 40, wise, at 50, rich, at 60, good, or never, from Noel, in Leitrim. So that's how it pans out, is it? And every time I hear that politician, Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, she sounds so wise and honest, not just the usual PR waffle. That's from Frank in Kildare. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 5 on 5 5 1 now. Irish world champion boxer Kelly Harrington joins us on the line. How are you doing, Kelly?
How are you? How's it going, Ray? How are you?
Good to talk to you. Now, I spotted you there online over the weekend. You're auctioning off your 2015 National League belt and an Irish vest in order to raise funds for who?
It's for a local family from the neighbourhood. Their house went up on fire on the 14th of March and all they were left with was the clothes on their back, basically.
Right. Nobody was hurt?
Nobody was hurt, thank God.
Right. And the head of the household is Paula Johnson. She's on the other line there. How are you doing, Paula? Hello, Paula.
Hello.
How are you, Paula? How are you?
Hi. Hi. Hey, hello.
Sorry for your troubles. That's a terrible thing to happen. So the house is pretty badly damaged then?
It's basically gutted. Upstairs is gone and downstairs it's destroyed, water damage and smoke. So, basically gone.
And when will you be able to move back in, if ever?
They said about a year.
Okay. And you need money?
We were left with just the clothes on our back.
Right.
I've always walked, but I'm out of work now 5 weeks, so I just couldn't come out of war's time.
Yeah.
It's not an easy time for the family. They've lost everything, photographs from years ago. And
is that Kelly?
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's Kelly there, yes.
Can I just say thank Kelly? I haven't been out to even see anyone. Can I just say thanks so much? I mean, you worked so hard for that belt. I can't thank you enough for you, Delphra.
Come here, it's the least I can do. We're a community and we all stand together through the good times and the bad times.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
So it's up there. People can bid on it. So you won this. This is something that's very close to your heart, something you treasure, but you're willing to sell it on to raise funds for Paul and her family, which is amazing. What price have people put on it so far?
There's 3.5 grand on it now.
Right.
So hoping that someone will come in and up it.
Right. And how close is the house to your house, Kelly?
Just literally across the road.
Right. Yeah. I've spoken to you before, and I know that you're very proud of your neighbourhood, and it gives you strength. And the people in the neighbourhood, in the community, give you strength to go on and win medals at world level. So it must feel good to be able to do something for one of your neighbours.
This is it, Ray. You see, like I said, we're all there through the good and the bad. And it's when things like this happen that we all really come together and pull together as a neighbourhood.
Mm. And somebody else has put up a GoFundMe page there as well, so people can go on. And so it's Johnson Coakley, is it, Paula? They'll find
that's it.
Johnson Coakley, yeah. How many of you live in the house?
There's 3 adults and 4 children.
Right. And you found alternative accommodation?
The council have put us up in an alternative house. But like that, the house is just a house. You have no beds, you have nothing to sit on, clothes, and just, we're really just at the mercy of the community at the moment. So,
right.
Which I have to say, they're so good just rallying around the way they have.
Yeah.
But like you said, Paula, it's a house, it's not a home.
No, it's not. Sure, I'll never get back. Everyone keeps saying, look, at least everyone got out alive. But your personal stuff would have passed away 4 years ago. The stuff belonged to who? The kids from the time they were born, the grandkids, the stuff that is, it's irreplaceable. But at the moment, I just need to get the kids sorted, to get them to some normality, really, it's a place to sleep. We're on my daughters, and I have married daughters. One of them took us in, the 7 of us. So we're on her sofas at the moment.
Right.
It's just to get normality back for the family, it's just...
And how are you, how are you, Paula? Because fires are very traumatic things.
To be honest with you, I'm sorry, I'm not being coping very well. I'm just trying to be drunk.
for the kids. I don't want them to see me, like, because they're trying their best, but I'm just devastated, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm just, I feel lost, I feel helpless.
Well,
it's Paul is a great person. Paula would do this for anybody.
Yeah.
She'd take every stray dog and cat off the street if she could, you know.
And Paula, you know, and everybody said it to you, but you got out with your lives, and
yeah.
And I know everything isn't replaceable, but I'd imagine people have their phones, so you can get photographs printed up again and all that yeah. sort of thing. So it's yeah. and it's less than a week ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Less
than not even a week. It's only yeah. 3 days.
Yeah, so you'll come out the other side, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's good.
So, 3,500 so far, Kelly, for the belt and the vest.
Yeah.
Right, and you are a world champion, so I'd expect more for that. So.
Well, hopefully, anyways, this is a belt of hard work and dedication yeah. to get me world champion medal.
And where can people bid on it?
It's up on Twitter. So send me a message and we'll go from there.
Okay. So Paula, mind yourself, and it's a tough time, but as I say, you still have each other.
That's it, we'll get through it. Can I just say one more time, just thanks to Kelly and to the community, the north of the city. I can't thank you enough for either doing for me and my family. Jesus, Paula, it's no problem at all.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Okay, Paula. Bye now. Mind yourself. Kelly.
Bye now. Bye-bye. See you, Paula. Bye.
Yeah, we'll give it a mention later on the show as well. Okay? Good talking
Thanks,
to you.
Ray.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Thanks very much. That's Kelly Harrington there. See you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray@rte.ie. Burnout, the Secret to Solving the Stress Cycle is a new book by twin sisters Emily and Amelia Nagowski. And they're on the line from London. Good afternoon, Emily and Amelia.
Hello, Ray.
Now, I don't know how I'm going to distinguish from one or the other, so I'll say your name before a question, I suppose, is the best thing.
Will do.
So tell us a bit about yourselves first, Emily.
So I'm a sex educator, and I wrote a book called Come As You Are that was mostly about the science of women's sexual well-being, but there was one chapter that was about stress and emotion processing, and people really found that to be the most important aspect of it, of course, because the best predictor of a woman's sexual well-being is her overall well-being. So I told this to Amelia, and she was like, no duh.
Yeah, this is Amelia. I thought, well, that seems obvious to me because I am a choral conductor. And as a conductor, one of the primary activities I engage in on the podium is getting my singers to engage emotionally with the music that they're making. So basically, I have to teach people how to feel their feelings from scratch. So I know well that it's not a thing that people intuitively just know how to do. It didn't surprise me at all that people connected to that information in Emily's book.
Okay.
And when I actually learned how to do it myself, not just on stage, but in my own real life, I do believe that it probably saved my life twice.
Yes, because you probably had burnout, Amelia.
Yes, I did. Yes, yeah. I was in the third year of coursework for my doctoral program, and I ended up in the hospital with a pain that the doctors couldn't diagnose as any particular condition. So they told me, oh, it's just stress. Go home and relax. But it turns out stress is not just stress. Stress is a physiological process that takes place in your body. And it was the stuff that I learned from Emily and in recovery from burnout that we ended up putting in the book.
Okay. So, Emily, how would you describe burnout?
Technically, burnout is a combination of emotional exhaustion, where you feel overwhelmed and exhausted by everything you have to do. And yet somehow, especially for women, we manage to worry that we are still not doing enough. Mm. Along with that goes a kind of depersonalization where you lose access to compassion and empathy, and you may even begin to feel sort of helpless, as if nothing you're doing can make a difference. So when you wake up in the morning, it feels like a project just to get out of bed and brush your teeth.
Yes.
That's burnout.
So much is expected of women, and you lay it out in the book there. There's one of the lines there, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. And that's a quote from Gloria Steinem. And I thought,
yeah.
That's true of this book. That, as a woman,
sorry.
You read this book and you go, oh God, it's very tough, very, very, very tough. And I'm joking, but as a man, I felt guilty, not that you care. But let's go, there's a difference between stress and stressors. So is the stress constantly trying to live up to the world's expectations? of you as a woman? Is that
part? No, that's the stressor.
That's the stressor.
That is the outside pressure that is activating a physiological process in our body. And the difficulty is that the behaviors we can engage in to try to deal with the stressor, that thing that's outside our body, is a totally different set of behaviors from the ones that will help us to move through this cycle of the stress response. Stress is this cycle with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Yeah. And we burn out when we get stuck in the middle, yes, where we confuse trying to deal with the stressor with what's going to help our body to return to a state of balance and calm.
It's the first time I had a light bulb moment about this, because everybody talks now about the fight or flight and the fact that, you know, in hundreds and thousands of years ago, the stress in our lives was running away from a predatory animal. So we don't get that anymore. Stress is different now. It's like a job interview or worrying about your teenage daughter or whatever. But we don't physically then act out the rest of the stress that our ancestors would have. Is that it?
Exactly.
That's it, right, okay.
Yeah, our bodies understand what running means. Our bodies understand the 20-second hug. The reason that's so good is because evolutionarily, if you return home from your escape from a predator and you wrap your arms around the people in your tribe, your home, your family, that's how your body knows you are now safe. Your body is a safe place for you to be. That's why something like a hug or physical activity are the two most efficient strategies for dealing with the stress in your body, which is separate again from dealing with the things that cause your stress.
This is Amelia. I was just, when we were listening to Paula telling her story about losing her house to a fire, I was thinking that is exactly an example of this, where she is truly in a life-threatening situation, but running or fighting is not going to solve her problem. And yet she's experiencing the stress as though she were still in this life-threatening situation. So I hope that she's taking steps to complete the stress response cycle by engaging in physical activity, by connecting with people she loves, by using her imagination to think through a fantasy of what it will be like when this solution is solved, and all kinds of other strategies you can do.
There's eight of them in chapter
one. There's eight of them in chapter one.
And Amelia, just to stay with you for a second, your own story is that stress builds up because you don't fulfill the cycle. You don't let the cycle go through. So it builds up inside you, and that's how you got physically sick.
Exactly. And it's for me, it was the buildup of low-level stressors over a long period of time. I dismissed them because they all seemed so small and so just sort of normal everyday life. And everybody experiences this. But when you never allow your body to go through the process that it's evolved to go through, all those neurochemicals have no place to go. They end up stuck, physically stuck in your body. Your body holds on to all of it. And eventually, for me, it actually destroyed an organ.
Yeah. So we do have to run. We do have to be active in some way, shape or form, because it replicates what our ancestors would have done, you know, running away from animals. That's it.
Can absolutely work. It can be an ideal thing for a lot of people. For me, I was very active already. I was working out 3 and 4 times a week, doing cardio, lifting weights. I did yoga, but none of it worked for me. I was doing it for the wrong reason, and because it was failing me for the reasons I was supposed to be doing it, it did not work for the stress management. When I learned about all the other ways to complete the stress response cycle, I added one in particular. One story I tell is I learned that I can complete the stress response cycle in my imagination. So I started doing my regular elliptical machine workout, and I started imagining myself as Godzilla tromping on the university where I was attending school, destroying the parking lot, crushing the administrative building. And now at the end of my workout, I didn't just feel hot and sweaty and tired. I felt powerful and successful and elated. And that's what it took for me. So it's different for everyone.
Now, I said early on in the show that this is geared towards women. So will you explain, Emily, the human giver syndrome?
Yes. So we got this language from a very dark but short and wonderful book called Down Girl, The Logic of Misogyny by a moral philosopher named Kate Mann. She posits a world where there's sort of two kinds of humans. There's the human beings who, you can tell by the name, have a moral obligation to be their full humanity. They're the human beings. And then there's the human givers who have a moral obligation to give their full humanity, their time, their attention, their love, their affection, their bodies, their hope, hopes and dreams, their very lives, to the human beings so that the human beings can achieve their full being potential. Guess which one the women are?
Yes, the human
And now
giver.
Giving itself is not the problem. We heard in the story of Kelly and Paula, this, like, we want to live in a world full of people who are willing to sell their treasures because their neighbor's house burned down. Yeah. That's a glorious, beautiful thing. The problem arises when there are some people who feel entitled to take whatever they want from a certain group of people. And the more a giver gives them, the more that person feels entitled to have whatever it is they want. That's when the imbalance comes in. And women get burnt out because they continue to give and give with no ability to get any of their own needs met, because it's not a giver's role to have needs and impose them on someone else.
So you're saying from day one, girls, then women, are expected to be pretty, happy, calm, generous, and attentive to the needs of others, that being probably men mainly.
Men and their children, yep.
Men and their children, right. So they can't be who they really should be, their true selves. And that's a sort of an underlying stress then for women, constant. It's constant there.
Absolutely constant. In the research, they actually use the phrase the third shift from the beginning language of the first shift where you're at work, the second shift where you come home and do the housework and take care of the kids. And that's even in the places where it's most equal, it's still 26 hours a week for women for householding and childcare and 10 for men. And then there's the third shift, the researchers call it, which is sleep. Even in our sleep, women are expected to be the ones who disrupt their sleep to do caretaking of other people in the family.
One damn thing after another is what being a woman feels like. That's what you say.
Chronic low-level stress.
And the real enemy, you say, is patriarchy.
Yeah.
Is it not getting better?
It is getting better. This is Amelia. And the truth is that there has been enormous progress made. For example, marital rape is no longer legal. For example, a woman now has the freedom to choose to keep her own name when she marries. A woman no longer has to give over all of her big victories. There have been victories.
Even when you say it like that, the fact that marital rape was ever allowed is completely crazy, you know.
It feels that way now, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the fact that you would have to take your husband's name, that's daft as well, you know. So maybe...
It seems that way now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you feel that way. That's an indicator of tremendous progress to me.
Right. Okay, but it hasn't changed enough, obviously, and it has changed in some countries more than others.
Yes. Yeah. There is still a persistent gap between what women are expected to be, both in terms of their generosity to others, how they give their bodies and their lives and their time, and who women actually are. And as their lives progress, they can feel even more acutely how that tension develops, how that chasm deepens.
Mm. And Emily, just on violence against women, because there's that sort of... some men feel that they own women, and that, unfortunately, that still applies, doesn't it? That, as, and especially when they're married and they feel that they can do whatever they want with the woman in their lives, and that's one thing. The other thing that struck me was, and we spoke about fight or flight earlier on, is this thing, because we've had some high profile rape cases in this country, and a lot was spoken about the freeze thing.
Yes.
Would you talk to me a bit about that?
Sure. So this typical stress response that we talk about, as you say, is fight or flight, which is the gas pedal go stress response of run away or beat the crap out of somebody. But when a person is in a life-threatening situation where your body assesses a threat and decides you are too slow to run, you are too small to fight, it slams on the brakes and you just shut down until the threat is gone or someone comes to save you. Or there's actually a researcher named Stephen Porges who has suggested that a function of the freeze response, as it's called, is to facilitate a painless death. So this is where sometimes people experience it as sort of going into shock. They may feel, even outside their own bodies, sluggish, like they can't even move their bodies. So survivors will look back on a moment when their bodies froze and wonder why they didn't kick or fight or scream or run. And the reason they didn't is because they physically couldn't. Their body was trying to protect them by shutting them down and not allowing them to escalate the violence of a situation. And it doesn't have to be violence as we usually envision it. Women's bodies protect us in sexual situations because there's a lot of vulnerability involved in a situation like that. So what a survivorship looks like is not the same as what we usually envision as experiencing violence.
Yes, fighting against it, yeah. BIC, Bikini Industrial Complex. Now, Amelia, explain that to me, that concept.
The term Bikini Industrial Complex came flying out of my mouth one day at the beginning of a choral rehearsal. I was standing in front of a bunch of college students and trying to teach them to breathe, which it sounds nuts that you have to teach students to breathe, but the fact is, when you inhale, your abdomen should expand. Your abdominal muscles need to be relaxed and able to oscillate between effort and rest, just like all of your muscles all of your life. But they have been indoctrinated from birth, told that they need to have abs of steel and that their abs should be contracted all the time. And I realized that I was not just having to teach them to sing, I was having to unteach them everything they thought they knew about what their bodies are supposed to look and feel like. So the phrase Bikini Industrial Complex came flying out of my mouth to explain the multi-billion dollar corporations, the corporate lobbying that goes on in the U.S. to support this aspirational ideal that is completely unattainable for almost everyone. The notion just of those shellacked abs of steel, that's just not a thing that anybody needs to have. And to aspire to it creates a stigma against anyone who doesn't have it. That creates shame, that it's actually more toxic for your health than having fat on your abdomen.
Right. There is help in the book, obviously. It's not all bad news. And you say that 42% rest per day is important. 42%, that sounds like a lot. What's that in hours?
It's 10 hours. It's nowhere near as unattainable as it sounds, though. It's, you know, between 7 and 9 hours of sleep. You add into that some paying attention to your food. You add into that some connection with people you really care about. Add into that a little physical activity, and you're there. A lot of people are only an hour or so away from having access to all the rest they're supposed to be getting. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 10 hours exactly every day. It can average out over a week or a month. But when we say you need to get the rest, we don't just mean, wow, it sure is a good idea to get some sleep. What we mean is, if you don't get the rest, the rest will come and get you. Many people may have had the experience where they finally go on vacation and then they find for the next 10 days they've got the flu because their body is just, the rest grabs you by the face and pins you to the ground, puts its foot on your chest and says, I told you to lay down. Now get some rest.
So that's an indicator that you're stressed and you're not getting enough sleep and not getting enough rest. What are the for people listening, how would they know that they're suffering from burnout? What are the symptoms?
If you wake up in the morning and you're already tired, you might be burned out.
Right.
If you are not sure if it's worth it to spend 3 extra minutes to brush your teeth because that just seems like too much, you might be burned out.
Right.
If you think that you should be punished because you haven't cleaned out your email inbox, you might be burned out.
And if you can't turn off the self-critical voice in your head that's constantly explaining to you all the ways that you're falling short of some ideal or not meeting other people's expectations, that's a really key feature of burnout, the constant personal self-criticism.
If you feel overwhelmed or exhausted and yet still worry that you're not doing enough, that's burnout.
Okay. You call the internal critic the mad woman.
We do.
Yeah, from Jane Eyre.
Right. Okay. And she's constantly, we men have the madman then, and we all have that, don't we? The person who constantly tells you that you're not achieving enough, you're not good enough, you're not doing what you should.
Yeah, her job is to manage the gap between expected you and actual you.
Right, go on.
And the distance between those two things for women is vast.
And that's the monitor, so the monitor thing, is it? You talk about an experience that I've never seen articulated before. It's where we're going on in life and we're doing something, trying to achieve something, and then we feel that all the effort we're doing is not going to achieve it. And at what stage do we say, stop, this isn't worth it?
Yes, there is. We invented a word for that specific emotion.
Yes.
Yes, you get to a point where you're like working really hard and you're like, I'm going to get this done. Nothing can stop me. I don't care how many forces try to get in my way. So I'm going to do this, right? You're like enraged and furious and working hard, but you oscillate from there into this like hopeless, helpless despair of like, I can't do it. Nothing I do. And then I'm going to do it. And I can't do it. We call that feeling foop. And there's a couple of different ways to make a decision about whether to give up and switch to a different goal or to keep trying. And what we ask you to do really is to imagine that you are a squirrel foraging for nuts. Right? And at a certain point, you need to like move on from one patch of nuts to the next patch of nuts because you've already foraged all the things that there are to get there. That the squirrel has to make a decision of when to move on. We too need to make a decision of when to move on. The squirrel is not making like a cost benefit list. It's not making like a pros and cons list. It just knows in its gut, I've done everything I can here. It's time for me to move on. And women too, everyone knows in their gut when they have crossed the line, they've done everything they can here, and it's time for them to let go and move on. But women are raised in a culture that teaches them to believe everyone else's opinion about their lives and their bodies and their internal experience more than they believe what their internal experience itself is trying to tell them. Our hope with the book is it helps women to quiet the noise on the outside and really amplify their internal voice to trust and believe when that voice is saying, girl, you have done everything you can. You can let go now.
Move on. Of course, it's easier said than done. You know, you may not be able to move on for
financial reasons or whatever. Oh, yeah, you hear that voice and you persist in whatever it is for 5 more months before you can bring yourself actually to create change.
And then this is Amelia. Remembering that quitting itself is a stressor. So when you make a new plan of what you're going to do, remember to complete the stress response cycle.
Okay, so what advice to people, you know, who feel that they're stressed? We've activity, positive social interaction, say that. You said affection there, the 20-second hug or a 6-second kiss if you're in a relationship. Big old cry, creative expression. What else? Because one of our texters here says, I have 4 children under 10, work part-time, run the home. What can they really say to me to reduce stress levels? That's Fiona.
When you feel overwhelmed and exhausted, and yet you still feel like you're not enough, feeling like you're not enough is a form of loneliness. So step one is reach out and get help. When you feel like you cannot handle what's going on in the world around you, you don't need more grit. You don't need more persistence. You need more help.
And can we also just normalize, if you're in a situation like that, multiple young children running a household, you're just going to be stressed. That is not a sign that you're doing it wrong. That's the sign that you are doing it the way that there is to do it. Yes. We're not going to reduce your stress level. We're just going to help you to like siphon off the very worst of it so that you can survive until they're all able to drive.
I meditate for the last 18 months using some videos from YouTube. Would the women recommend it as a de-stressor? Claire asks.
There is a lot of research that demonstrates that mindfulness practice is a definite stress reliever, both in the immediate feeling better right now effect and also in the long-term rewiring your brain so that it processes stress differently.
Women are women's worst enemies, says Anna. It's as simple as that. Who was it that said, keep your friends close and your enemies closer? Men will never judge you the same way that women will. I could write a book
on the subject. Judge you in an entirely different way. Sorry.
No, well, you know, what they're saying there is that, you know, women can be cruel. That's what I think they're saying.
Yeah,
there.
So when we are cast in the role of human givers, if one of us declines or falls short or says, look, I need to take care of my own energy and not do this project, then it's like they're betraying the other givers, putting more work onto the other givers. And so women can be incredibly cruel and vicious because they feel betrayed by someone who is supposed to be on their team. And so we like judge and say, what's the matter with her? She needs to get back in line. Yes. That's a kind of energy that we get from fellow human giver syndrome folks rather than from the people who feel entitled to our energy.
So women maintain the status quo as well. Last night I was woken up at 3:30 by a neighbor's barking dog. I couldn't get back to sleep. Then at 5:30 I was finally getting back to sleep. A different neighbor's dog barked for a half an hour and I was wakened again. I've been exhausted at work. This happens regularly. I cannot speak to the owners as they are difficult people. I am at my wit's end. At weekends, the first dog starts barking at 7. I've spoken to the guards and I think that's for a different program. Thanks for that anyway, Anne.
The short answer is earplugs to a problem like that. Yeah.
This seriously described me. I thought I was going crazy. 27 years a lone parent with 3 children. I was exhausted for 3 years. That's Andrea there. So there's some sound advice there, and I would imagine that when people read it, they'll recognise themselves in it. Burnout is the name of the book, The Secret to Solving the Stress Cycle. Emily and Amelia Nikowski, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And Olive says on that, the freeze situation can also be as simple as not speaking out about how we feel through lifetime habitual patterns of being seen and not heard. Peace at all costs. You can stop those there now, Will. Burnout for women, Ray. There's no such thing in existence. Women have just perfected the art of burning out their men since time began. Any advice out there for burnout in men? Well, Jim, this particular book is aimed at women and not men. And then on other things from earlier on the show, on the New Zealand tragedy, I just listened to your correspondence from Chris and I fully agree. Immediately after the attack in Christchurch, the Prime Minister gave a press conference and described the attack as well planned. And an expert on terrorist attacks gave an interview on RTE News describing how these terrorists inspire others. I feel these words give positive feedback to these people, even though the media must report the latest news. I feel the need to monitor... I feel these words are positive feedback to those people. Even though the media must report the latest news, I feel the need to monitor language use better. This is not the first time I have heard similar affirmations describing terrorist events. I also believe the people who carry out these crimes should only get one mention and instead focus on the people who lost their lives. And I moved to New Zealand in 2005, applied for a gun licence, failed the test twice on the day, still got a licence and bought an AK-47. Semi-automatic weapon the next day. I've never shot a gun before. And on Kelly, hopefully some company will buy Kelly's top and return it to her, says Steve. And another Steve there, Steve Coogan has the Irish accent to a T. Does a great accent on an outtake from Moonboy on YouTube. And back to stress, found a great stress reliever is swimming for 1 hour per week or watching Little House on the Prairie on a Sunday morning. And having a good cry works every time. That's from V. Well, they do say in the book that a good old cry is very, very helpful. I've already bought the book on Audible and will begin listening as soon as this interview is over. I reached burnout last year after the repeal campaign and I've been putting myself back together for months. Thanks so much for this book. Also liked your last one. That's Mickey in Portobello. And went on holiday to Spain for downtime from a very busy, stressful job for years, but ended up having a stroke, says Emma Dublin. There you go. There is that thing that we're building it up and building it up, and whatever's happening in our body, we manage to survive until we get to the other side, which is a holiday, and then we just crumble. Sometimes it's as innocuous as sleeping for 12 hours a day, but other times it can mean illness. Just on that, the GoFundMe family house fire of such a beautiful family. That's the GoFundMe. If you put that in to the GoFundMe page, you want to help Pamela. Was it Paula, sorry, and her family, not Pamela, Paula and her family. I'll give you that address again. GoFundMe, family house fire. It's gone. Okay, I'll get back to that after the Nocht. An ish tosh now in the free skeleton and Nocht, the Cart to Wallish. 51551 ray at rte.e. Cart for Nocht. Now, you might remember we spoke to Gabrielle a couple of weeks back on the show. She's living in Valencia in Spain and she's looking to do a house swap with someone who lives in Kilkenny. Well, Gabrielle is back on the line. How are you doing, Gabrielle?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you again. Now, remind people who wouldn't have heard you or may have forgotten you your story about why you want to move back to Kilkenny and how you end up in Valencia.
Yeah, so my family... Well, I left Ireland in 2008 when the recession hit and I've been in Spain for the last 11 years. And when I was on holiday there last summer, I kind of just... got a hankering to come back home for a while, so we decided to make the move, my husband and I and our two kids in tow, and we're going to move back to Ireland, as you said yourself, as an experiment, just to see how it goes.
Right, and your husband's Spanish?
He is.
Okay, and how does he feel about the whole thing?
He's good. I was wondering if he'd speak to you, but he said no. No, he's... He's feeling good. He's definitely nervous about it.
Yeah.
But he's on board, Ray. It's been amazing.
Okay.
It's been amazing. I'm really. He's blown me away, to be honest.
So you got on and you told us your story, and then you said you want to do a swap with somebody in Kilkenny because that's where your family are.
That's right. Yeah. So So the idea I had was that because it's just for a few months, so if someone in Kilkenny City. I didn't think there'd be a hope of finding anyone. And someone in Kilkenny City that felt like coming to Valencia for a few months. And we hit the jackpot, Ray.
With Anne. Hello, Anne.
Ray. How are you?
So you say hello to Gabrielle. I know you've been talking, but just say hello for manners.
Hi, Gabrielle. Good to hear you.
Hi, Anne. Hi.
And what's your story?
Well, I like Spanish, for a start. I like languages. I like travel. I don't mind house swapping at all. I like my house, but I'm not precious about it. And I listened to Gabrielle, and I discovered that that I have what she wants, maybe.
Yes.
And she can give me what I want, which is an adventure.
Perfect match. Perfect match.
Yeah.
Do you mind?
It's ideal.
Yes.
Ideal.
I want to find out a little bit about Anne. So, whereabouts are you in your life, Anne?
Early retired.
Right.
And enjoying retirement, and I suppose, you know, I'm able to pursue my hobbies, and one of them would be French, another is Spanish, another is dancing.
Yes.
And we do a lot of swing dancing in Kilkenny, and that suits me very much, and I believe there's a lot of salsa going on in Valencia, or Balencia, I'm told it's called.
Balencia.
Balencia.
And are you going over there on your own?
Yes.
Right.
I am.
Right.
Yep.
And have you been?
A friend will come with me to Alicante, and then I'm off on my own.
Right.
Just by coincidence, she's going that way.
And you know Anne has young children?
Anne?
Sorry, and Gabrielle has young children.
Yeah, yes. Of course. Well, I've got Stairgates today. They arrived. My son dropped off the Stairgate.
Right.
Oh, Anne, you're so good.
It's so easy. It's just so easy, Gabrielle.
And you're right. Go on, Gabrielle.
No, yeah. Anne has just made this so easy. She's made it so easy. It's just fantastic.
Mm. And the location of her house, Gabrielle?
Fantastic. Kilkenny City.
Yeah.
It's nearer to my aunt. It's near to my sister. Fantastic.
Right.
Couldn't be better, Ray. Couldn't be better.
And you're going to change roles now. Is that the plan, yourself and Vicente? That he's going to take on the house husband role and you're going to go to work?
This is it. Very excited about it.
Yeah.
Very excited.
So have you got a job lined up?
I had a job interview this morning and it went very well and I've another one lined up, so fingers crossed.
Right. And when is the swap happening, Anne? When are you moving?
Well, they're coming to my house on the 14th of April and Vicent has kindly invited me to stay for 2 days. And they're very flexible, you know,
right.
And I would be too, so.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that, but I think they're getting the better deal as regards the car, Ray.
Go on.
Well, Gabrielle mentioned bells and whistles, and I know the difference between a bell and a whistle, but on a Renault Scenic, I haven't a clue.
Right.
And I would love, that would be a great challenge for me to be able to drive a Renault Scenic in Spain.
Right, and what are you giving them in Kilkenny?
Oh, lovely, bright, sunny house.
But car-wise?
Oh, God, 04 Toyota Yaris.
Right, okay, yeah.
There's two children's seats in it at the moment, but I don't know, there'll be two, yeah.
Yeah. So is this all sort of just ye trusting each other? There's no legal standing or anything like that?
When I first rang Anne, the first thing she said to me was that as long as we have trust and flexibility, you know, that this will work out.
Right.
And Ray, Anne and I actually have a connection.
Go on.
She was a friend of my mother's. And my children have actually played with her grandchildren on numerous occasions. and I believe my sister Pia told me that we used to play in your house when we were small.
My lot remember playing in your house. You mentioned a Singer sewing machine. Would that have been your mother's?
No, the sewing machine we have here is belonged to my husband's granny.
No, but the one in the house that they would have played in back in Kilkenny. Was there a sewing machine in that house?
Oh, there was, yes.
Yes, that's what she, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, so if ever you're having a conversation, I'll step in just to interpret. for you. I'm glad to be, we're all glad to be involved in you know, putting you two together, and I hope it works out. And the flexibility side of it, Anne, so there's no time limit, or is there a time limit? Or
no, I've left it kind of very much to what suits. I know that Gabrielle thinks that August would be very hot. So I'm, you know, I'll probably be back in July. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. Okay. All very exciting. Very exciting. So maybe
it's so exciting, Ray.
If you don't mind, we'll talk to you when you're in situ. When Gabrielle, when you've moved to Kilkenny, and Anne, when you've moved to Valencia, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Okay. Great talking to you.
Fantastic.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you, Ray.
Bye. Connor Pope. Have you ever done it? That's something you must have done over the years.
House swap?
A house swap, yeah. You strike me as a house swap man.
No. I don't know what to make of that. No, I've never done house swapping. I've done Airbnb loads of times.
Yeah.
And I've stayed in people's houses that when it's clearly been their house. Like, you know, all of the cupboards and all the closets are all like full of their clothes and stuff. But nobody's ever stayed in my house.
Right.
And it's not my thing.
No, it wouldn't be my thing either.
Like I love it when I hear people doing it, and I've got colleagues of mine who've had amazing house swaps. Like, they've swapped their little house in Dublin City for like houses in Miami with pools, and you know, and it seems to work for people, but I don't know, it's not really my thing.
Yeah. Connor's here, pricewatch@rte.ie. We're going to talk to Connor after a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Conor, you were writing about the parade in Dublin.
I was, yeah. I went to the parade. I was lucky enough to be invited by the St. Patrick's Festival people. So myself and all my family got to be in one of the grandstands, which is great, because to be honest, when you've got young kids, it's really hard to go to the parade unless you've got a proper view. So you have to either be there very, very early or get the fancy seats. So we were lucky enough to get the fancy seats.
And then
I was actually also working. So I was able to do both things. So I was able to spend some time with my family, and then I was able to write the colour piece for the parade.
And it was bright and sunny but cold.
Do you know what? This time, our last St. Paddy's Day, it was snowing. So I think any time when it's not lashing rain or freezing cold, it's a good day. And I've been covering the parade in various different guises since the mid-1990s when I started working on the Irish Times website. And I've covered the parade in short sleeves, and I've covered the parade in thermals. And I think on Sunday was one of the good days because it was sunny and it was a little bit cold. But they do the parade extremely well. I mean, because sometimes parades in other places, they can just go on a bit long, and eventually you're just going, oh, enough of the brass bands, and like, please just stop. Whereas it seems to be the perfect length of time, you know, just before kids start getting bored and just before adults start dying of the cold
and wanting to go to the toilet.
Exactly.
But I'd say the time you were in the t-shirt was that when mad cow disease, because what happened that year was they had to postpone the St. Patrick's Day parade from March till early June.
No.
I can't imagine you were in short sleeves on the 17th of March.
Some of your listeners will be able to tell you. They'd be able to go right back through the weather forecasts or the weather over previous years. But there's been a couple of really, really good years. And I never fail to marvel at how big a deal St. Paddy's Day is. Because actually, as part of, I had to write the big colour piece in the Irish Times yesterday. So as well as looking at the parade, I went and I decided I'd have a wander around Dublin, and I had a wander through Temple Bar. And I'd never been in Temple Bar on St. Patrick's Day before in my entire life. And I swear to
Huge.
God, it was just insane.
Yeah.
And for you or I, or for lots of your listeners, we'd look at that through a jaundiced eye and say, oh, that must be terrible. But for the people who are there, it must be like Mardi Gras in New Orleans or Carnival in Rio. It must be a really special thing for them. And I think we should sometimes take off our hat of begrudgery and say, do you know what? There are very few countries in the world where their national day is celebrated all over the world. You have, and not even celebrated or even acknowledged or recognised. July the 4th. Everyone knows that's the American Day of Independence. The Bastille Day, July the 12th.
Yeah, not so much though.
But like, you know, you'd be able to hazard a guess.
Yes.
But ask most people when Germany's Day or Spain's Day or Italy's Day or even George's Day, Andrew's Day or David's Day. Sure, nobody's a rasher.
No.
But everyone knows about Paddy's Day, and I think that's a good thing.
And myself and Tom travelled in on the Lewis, and we got off at Stephen's Green and then at the top of Grafton Street, because you know Grafton Street sort of goes down on...
Yeah.
So you can see, and there was just a sea of green hats.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked amazing.
And you know what? And this is the thing. I kind of, when I was a kid, and I'm sure it was the same when you were a kid, like the Paddy's Day parades were kind of rubbish. You'd be, it's a few people going up and down the road in Massey Ferguson tractors and trailers and throwing sweets at the kids. Whereas nowadays, everyone dresses up. And I
swear
to God,
do that anymore. Health and safety. No,
but the number, like, I wish, like, if I could change one thing about my life, Ray, I would have been the man who got in on the green top hat business a few years ago. Because there was tens of thousands of them sold in the run-up to Paddy's Day. And those green shamrock suits.
Yes.
I mean, that's a
And then I saw
spinner.
a number of guys that, whatever way it was, it looked like you were given, or a leprechaun was giving you a piggyback.
I saw a few of those guys as well. Yes. Like, and you know what? You know, it's easy to be sarky about these things, and it's easy to say, oh, that's just terribly cheesy. But sure, it's a bit of crack, and there's no harm.
People are smiling. Now, sort of from St. Patrick's Day parades to pineapples.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend for me.
What were you doing with a pineapple?
Well, some of your listeners will have noticed in recent weeks that the internet blew up with this hashtag pineapple hack, and there was a short video appeared online over recent days which showed a new way to eat pineapples, and it turned out that we've all been eating pineapples wrong for hundreds of years, because traditionally what you do with a pineapple is you cut it into slices and you take the hard rusky rind off it and you eat it, and that's how we've been doing it all my life, all your life, all your listeners' lives, because that's how you eat pineapples. But this little clip came out on YouTube, on the internet, on various social media platforms, and it showed a way that you would take out the top off a pineapple and then you could slowly peel off the individual segments of
nearly like Jenga.
A little bit like Jenga, and then what you'd be left with would be perfectly edible segments of pineapple, and then the core at the centre would be untouched. So rather than just accepting the internet at face value, we in the Irish Times decided to try and test this out. So I went off and I bought myself a pineapple, I decapitated it as you do, and then I tried to pick apart the pineapple as the video had shown me that I could easily do, and I swear to God, I have never been so disappointed in all my life. And I realised that, you know what, Ray, sometimes the internet doesn't tell the truth. I know, it's a shock, right? But couldn't eat the pineapple like that. And effectively, I spent about 8 minutes tearing apart a piece of fruit with my hands. It was sticky, it was gooey, there was pineapple juice all over the place.
Could it be because of its state of ripeness?
Well, a couple of people suggested that now. And then some people said, no, you're using the wrong pineapple. You need to be using a snack, I think it's a snack pineapple or some kind of small pineapple. And then other people got on to me and said, no, that pineapple needs to be a lot riper. That's not what the internet told me. It just said, here's a pineapple, you just peel off the chunks and you're good to go. And it wasn't like that at all. And it was just really messy and very disappointing.
So I know. You're back to the old way.
But you know, I don't really like pineapple that much anyway, you know, so I'm easy enough.
There used to be a really posh thing. I remember seeing it at a do in the local officer's mess. So what they do is they take out the whole pineapple, take out the middle, the core, right? Then chop it up, put it back in, and use the pineapple as a container, but mix the pineapple chunks with fresh cream. And then return the top to it and put it into the middle of the table.
That's very fancy.
That'll impress your friends. It's sort of retro. Retro 80s.
Yeah, it's very retro.
Right, okay. Pricewatch at rte.ie. Now, my mother had her mobile phone stolen in July of 2018. She cancelled the phone number in the Vodafone shop in Henry Street and was told that everything would be sorted. But since January, she's been receiving solicitor's letters from Vodafone saying that she owes them €316 in outstanding bills. She's very upset about this and is not getting any sleep over it. She has always paid her bills on time. She's 79 years old and doesn't need this in her life at this moment. She is naturally very upset and is crying every time I visit her. I spent 3 hours on the phone to Vodafone and they refused to budge. The rep is saying that the outstanding balance needs to be paid. The latest letter that she received states that if she doesn't pay Vodafone within 7 days, they will take her to court. I really don't know what to do. This is terrible.
Isn't it? Like, I only got this late last week, and it was one of those emails that just leaps off the screen at you, and you're saying, this can't be right. You cannot be harassing, well, you shouldn't be harassing anybody over something like this, but particularly for a person who's 79 years of age and is clearly very distressed about the scenario. So, like, it's just wrong, and it doesn't matter if it's Vodafone or if it doesn't matter if it's any other company. This is unacceptable behaviour. And sometimes I often think that what we're dealing with when we're dealing with big companies is we're dealing with a complete absence of humanity and common sense, because all that would have been required here would have been somebody somewhere to look at the information before them and saying, hang on a second, like is this what one of the biggest mobile phone companies in the world wants to be devoting our time to? And I understand that companies have to get their money back, and I understand that sometimes people leave outstanding bills and they have to have some class of zero tolerance policy. But somebody somewhere should have taken a look at the facts that were in front of them and said, do you know what? We're not going to go down this particular road. So you have a scenario whereby, and I think this is a problem in our society, because there was a time when if you missed a bill or if you owed money, you know, you would be contacted by a human being and there could be a discussion that would take place. Whereas now what seems to happen is as soon as you're in arrears of any kind with any company, they start sending out letters from debt collection agencies and they start threatening you with all sorts of things. And people are genuinely very scared about that kind of thing. Now, the reality is there's very little that any company could do to this woman in this scenario. Like, this woman, had she had the wherewithal and the confidence to just say, would you go out of that? Like, it's not like she was going to end up in court. And it's not like any judge in the world would have entertained them.
But it's easy for you to say that.
It is.
A 79-year-old woman.
It's very difficult.
Who's, you know, brought up in a time when you would have been told a borrower or a lender be, yeah, always pay your bills, etc., etc.
Absolutely. So I'm not downplaying her yeah, upset by this, but I'm just saying, you'd almost like to be able to reach these people and say, you know, don't worry about it.
Yes, yeah.
It's all hot air, not going to be a big problem. You're not going to go to court. You're not going to end up in debtor's prison. But when you actually get the letters, it's a very frightening thing and it's a very scary thing. And so she was her son was calling to the house and she was in tears and she was very upset. And this is a woman who for her entire life, for 60 years of her bill paying life, she'd never missed a payment on anything, and suddenly she's being threatened with the courts over something that, you know,
happened? Where did the bill come from?
Well, what happened is her phone was stolen.
Yes.
And she went into a Vodafone shop and she reported the theft, and she thought that the contract was then over.
So somebody was using her phone?
No. But apparently, Vodafone don't have any record of her going into the shop to cancel the contract. So Vodafone kept billing her in August, September and October. So then when she went to get a new phone in October, and I'm speculating here, but she probably wouldn't have the same, you wouldn't be using her mobile phone as much as I would, say. So, you know, so she went in 3 or 4 months down the road to get a new phone from Vodafone, which was the company she'd been dealing with for a long time. And they said, oh no, you owe us €300.
Uh-huh.
And we're not going to give you the new phone until you pay the bill. And then it quickly escalated to the debt collectors were called in, and, you know, and maybe there was solicitor's letters, although to be perfectly honest, it seems unlikely that even Vodafone would start sending solicitor's letters to people in scenarios like this, because it would cost them money. So that's how it happened. So there was a miscommunication somewhere along the way. She went into a shop and thought she'd done what was required to cancel the contract, and, you know, then she went in to start again 3 months down the road. Vodafone said, well, we've no record of that. And then when her son called and explained the situation, I think this is one of the terrible things about it, they refused to budge. Now, it was at that point that a flag should have been raised, and they should have said, you know what, somebody somewhere in the company should have had the decency and common sense to say, forget about it, doesn't matter, we'll sort it all out. Clearly there was a miscommunication. That miscommunication could have come from our listener, it could have come from the people who worked in the Vodafone shop, it could have come from Vodafone headquarters. There was a breakdown of communication. These things happen. And as I've said repeatedly on the show, it's not the fact that something bad happens, it's how you handle it after the fact that really matters. So I contacted Vodafone last Friday, and within hours they were back to me saying, terribly sorry, shouldn't have happened. We're not going to be pursuing this listener for the outstanding balance of €316. And they've apologised to her, they've been on to her, and the problem has now been resolved. So they do deserve credit. Okay. Because they didn't insist on payment, and they perhaps could have if they've no record of the cancellation of the contract, but so they've waived all the monies that are outstanding, and the woman and her son are happy enough with that.
Okay, but where is the humanity and the flexibility?
Well, this is the thing, the thing is, Vodafone are one of the better companies when it comes to customer service, from my understanding of how they operate, and they do recognise the value of empowering their staff. And I think that's the really key phrase here. It comes down to empowering your frontline staff to make decisions that are not listed in the list of 10 options on the computer when you're dealing with your customer service queries. You just need to have the ability to show a little bit of like a flexibility and decency and say, do you know what, we're going to deal with this in a different way.
The mobile phone companies have no common sense on the customer front. I recently lost my phone and had similar face-to-face in Grafton Street shop. Connor's right. I remember it being a hot day. There's your... the year, Naomi and Tala. And they all want to say St. Patrick's Day and not Paddy's Day. That annoys me.
Yeah.
It's St. Joseph's Day today, by coincidence, says Paddy. not Patrick. Ask Conor Pope about what plan on health insurance for me, age 52, married. I gave up health insurance in 2008, starting again. Thanks. That's a common enough story, isn't it?
It is a common enough story. A lot of people gave up their health insurance during the
luxury. Yeah.
And they couldn't give up their car insurance, they couldn't give up their house insurance because that was usually tied to their mortgages, but they could give up their health insurance. And an awful lot of people did give it up. Now, to be perfectly honest, I'd be reluctant to say to anybody, even if you were to ask me now, what's the best plan I should be on? But what I would suggest is that the starting point for anybody looking for health insurance is go onto the Health Insurance Authority website, which is www.hia.ie, and start looking at the plans that way. It can be kind of complicated, but
Health Insurance Authority.
The Health Insurance Authority.
So they're an umbrella organisation.
That's the regulator that oversees the entire health insurance sector, and it's hia.ie.
Yeah. And with regards to that lady of 79, I had the same situation with Meteor, who pursued me like Vodafone pursued her. As soon as I made a complaint to Comreg, I had no further issues. The so-called debt was cancelled. If you know you're in the right, immediately contact Comreg, says Julianne.
Yeah, and Comreg do have a role to play in these things. But to be honest, there should be a way for people to make contact with the companies directly and for the companies to exercise a little bit of decency and common sense, as we've said already, and just to say, listen, we don't think this 79-year-old woman is out to screw us for €300.
Can you tell me, have their customer care improved as it is time for me to call them about my contract? This is AIR. You were on a few weeks ago and we got a litany of complaints about AIR after that.
We did get a huge amount of complaints. Well, they said to me that they were a long way through improving their customer care, and that was 3 or 4 weeks ago. But I'm still getting complaints about the company into the Irish Times, so I certainly have seen no sign that there's been a dramatic improvement.
We're nearly done with you now. I'll let you go after this. You please ask Conor Pope, what do you do if you stop paying a bill because the phone is non-existent, like it has been broken for a long time and it's long gone but the bills are still coming in the door?
You need to contact the company and you need to tell them that. But these things work two ways. If the company doesn't know that your phone is broken and that you're not using your phone, they will continue to supply you with a service, whether or not you use that service. You can only expect them to cancel the contract when you contact them to say the phone isn't working.
Okay. 2012.
Was that when the great summer was?
It was a heat wave in March. I was pregnant with my youngest daughter, says that person.
Yeah, and can we just talk about the Paddy's Day thing?
Yeah.
Because a couple of people have given out to me about calling it Paddy's Day. Just to be clear, I'm not saying Paddy's Day. So it's not Paddy's Day.
No,
Paddy's Day is fine.
I think people think there's a lack of respect for our national saint.
Ah, no, I mean no disrespect to St. Patrick. And I think he'd take it
he
in
wouldn't
the spirit
take
to which he extended.
St. Patrick's Day 2003 was roasting. I was pregnant as Anne Ratoth. So
I think Anne and Ratoth is right. I think it was going back at least 15 years this now.
Right. In the wake of St. Patrick's Day and the sad syndrome of Brexit, I think the Irish should campaign for and lead on establishing an annual Across Europe Day to celebrate the EU. Will you ask Conor what he'd think? There's so much in Europe mythology to share internationally, says Susan. So European Day. I'm sure there is one already, is there?
There is a Europe Day.
There is a Europe Day.
There is, yeah. I have no idea when it is.
No.
And do you know what? I don't think that would ever succeed because it sounds a little bit too much like organised fun. And organised fun just never works.
Conor, thanks very much. Price Watch at RTE if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. That's it from us. Mary Wilson's on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.